That Great Business Show. Winner, highly commended award, Irish Podcast Awards.
Welcome to episode 178 of That Great Business Show, home of great business tips, insights, and opportunities on every episode delivered in our commute-friendly package. And it's all thanks to De Facto Shaving Oil, the world's best shaving oil. Not a beard oil, it's a shaving oil. A couple of drops onto a wet face and you are sorted. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide, it's your ideal travel companion, defactoshave.com.
De Facto, the revolutionary shaving oil, changing the face of shaving. For the smoothest shave of your life, just add water. No more lathering up or cleaning up afterward. Just add a few drops of water and you're ready to go. De Facto's blend of all natural oils hydrates and protects your skin. No more razor burns or irritation. A spa treatment for your face. Perfect for all skin types and lasts so much longer than traditional foams or gels. De Facto, a shaving revolution. Just add water. Available from selected pharmacies and from defactoshave.com.
Now, I am Conal O'Moran, Fontestier. What a huge response to episode 177 when expattaxes.ie boss Stephanie Wickham told us where we could bring our businesses to lower taxes and live the better life. Lots and lots of you seem to like the idea of spending 2 months in Thailand, for example, and to earn a tax rebate. If you haven't heard it and would like to know more, well, straight on to your favorite podcast platform and search for 177. It's a goodie. And make sure to tell your pals about it too. This week, we have a consultancy firm that I, for one, hadn't heard of, but they're growing at a furious pace. And if you're in the financial planning industry, you know there's something big going on as well, as the big players are getting bigger and bigger, eating up the smaller players. So we'll see what the business opportunities are during this consolidation. Now, as a former stockbroker, I have always found it curious how different the Irish personal saving landscape is to the UK. Pick up any UK newspaper, and especially over the weekend, and you'll read page after page after page of personal financial advice. Here, well, not so much. Some of that is probably down to our history, lack of wealth accumulation over generations and the like. But I think some of it is down to a basic lack of financial education. And if you're not taught it, well, you probably don't know it. And it's time we did some learning. A little over a year ago, financial planning firm PAX, P-A-X, was bought by UK wealth management company Fairstone. That was the first move for Fairstone into Ireland. And they have ambitious plans for Ireland. Former PAX chief executive Paul Merriman is now CEO of Fairstone in Ireland. Welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Well, you also have another little business called Ask Paul. So I'm going to ask Paul a few questions. Paul, tell me, what is it about Irish people that they don't take an interest in their personal finances? It's not hard, but it's interesting.
It is, yeah. It's a really good point. And I think you mentioned one thing there in your introduction about the lack of maybe wealth over the years in Ireland compared to certainly in the UK as well. I think as well, if you're not taught it, you don't know it. I think something we should have been taught in school in around transition year period, right up to maybe sixth year, is personal finance, how mortgages work,
yeah.
How to borrow money. I don't know why it's not done. It's a big bugbear.
Basic.
And we therefore started the Ask Paul channel. And the Ask Paul was an Instagram page and it was later regulated under PAX. So it was a trade name of PAX Asset Management when we actually got the business up and running, the page up and running. We started on Facebook and Snapchat about 6 or 7 years ago, and I was just giving daily tips about how interest worked, what a variable rate mortgage was, what a fixed rate was, how interest rates and credit unions work, how banks work, basically everything to do with personal finance, pension, tax relief, compound interest growth, stock markets. Luckily, the page grew substantially and we went from 6 or 7 staff to over 70 staff when we were acquired in a few years. And we've had tremendous growth. We manage over, I think it's 340 million of assets now, which is quite large for a brokerage in Ireland. So yeah, we were spotted by Fairstone. We were the fastest growing financial planning firm in the Republic at the time. We were approached and we were acquired, and that has us here.
Okay, two questions about that. Why did you sell? Because why would you not do the reverse and go into the UK, for example?
Yeah, and you know what? It was a really, really good question. And as Paul was flying, and we actually spoke to somebody in Germany about it. We do a bit of business in Germany in the past, and somebody asked me to bring the page to Germany. and try and find the Paul in Germany to try and replicate the model, because those work really well. We break down personal finance. We've over 100,000 followers on Instagram and 80,000 followers on TikTok.
That is huge.
It's huge.
So therefore, there is a demand for this.
No, there is a massive demand. And the reason why we didn't take it any bigger is that I've always been quite passionate about the industry. There's a few major stakeholders in our industry, and the consumer is the most important. Wrapped around that is a central bank, and then we have the advisors, whether it be a stockbroker, whether it be a financial planner or a banker or some bank assurance person in the bank selling insurance. The most important part, like I said, is the consumer. When we were acquired, I'd also had another business they bought called ClearChoice, and ClearChoice was a comparison site that I developed a few years ago. I was ex-Irish Life, and I left Irish Life to set up PAX. There was hardly any systems in the broker world, if you like. So we set the system up called ClearChoice. We got a couple of quid together. We developed a software. It showed you all different performance of funds, showed you all different life insurance contracts and what was behind them. It was a really good system. And Fairzone acquired that as well. And we did that again to try and up the game of the advisors around the country. I think the life insurance industry has a bad past. Maybe 20, 30 years ago, people typically seen the life insurance salesman going door to door and not the qualified financial advisor that came later, or not the certified financial planner, which I am, through UCD and hours and hours of modules and training and to become a certified financial planner. And our standards are there from the Financial Planner Standards Board, a worldwide recognized organization for financial planners. And I think people had a distrust with our industry. So I suppose with Ask Paul, it was great that we could reach people on social media. We had about 13,000 clients now. So although we have 180,000 between two platforms, about 13,000 clients, so those people are communicating with us and doing business with us and other people and going into the bank and knowing how to get the mortgage better. Or when the pension guy came in to work, they knew what questions to ask about their scheme. What's the management charge? What has more equities in it? They're like proper questions rather than just sitting there like a rabbit in the headlights not knowing what's going on. But I suppose Fairstone gave us the opportunity to say, look, we're going to buy and we want to grow into the Irish marketplace, and we want to acquire, and we want to acquire quite aggressively. We're looking to take on maybe 50 to 70 firms over a 5-year period.
Get away.
Yeah, and we knew Drew selling the clear choices. It is, yeah. And within year one, we've already got 6 over the line, and another 7 or 8 in the pipeline for a year. So we're on track. But when we look at what Ask Paul was doing to the consumer, we thought if we could also help the industry and try and bring that Ask Paul clear, jargon-free to our industry through acquisition, we'd be doing kind of two parts of the stakeholder. We're looking after the consumers and also the financial planners in the industry as well. So we thought it was a bigger way to grow in Ireland. I also had a selfish reason. I have kidney disease. I'm 41.
But you've had kidney disease for a long time.
Since I was a child. Yeah. But I always said to
you
myself,
"You look very healthy."
I try. Thank you. I always said to myself, I'd try being in a really good financial situation by 45. And like, I'm in financial planning, so you have to plan these things out. So yeah, I mean, the capital event was amazing.
You said that you want to retire at 60, but I can't believe an entrepreneur is going to retire at 60.
No, I'd be on dialysis troop, it's all probably from 60, the way that things are going. And I just didn't want to have a bigger business on my own or more money in the bank and being tied to a dialysis machine. So I thought the best thing to do at the age profile it was and how good the business has got. I've also seen businesses think they're better than they are and they end up not plateauing or failing. I don't think we would have, but I just thought it was, from a risk point of view, it was the right time to de-risk and get somebody with a bigger firepower in behind the brand and behind us.
Well, what do they bring to you as a matter of interest?
A lot. And to be fair, we were approached by a couple of private equity firms before Fairstone approaches, and we had no interest in private equity at the time. So Fairstone was a very small business. The CEO in the UK, Lee Hartley, had started a business about 10, 11 years ago. It was a small firm as well. Acquired one firm, another firm, got a bit of backing and went on to do amazing things. They have over 15 billion of assets under management now and 55 offices, 1,200 staff throughout the UK. So where they were 10 years ago, truth be told, probably without Lee's ambition and where they got to, they probably shouldn't have been today. So I think Lee was a big driver. I think when I met Lee, I bought into Lee. And now behind Lee is TA, who are one of the biggest private equity firms in the world.
What is TA?
So it's just a massive private equity firm. Okay. So they had bought into Fairstone, if you like, in the second round.
And just see now, I had asked you the questions why you didn't do it, because you could have gone to a TA or
similar. I
didn't
want that. I think from a private equity point of view and the pressure and what we're doing, I'm a really good financial planner. I think I'm obviously decent CEO to get the business to where it was and to
get
it sold.
Great talker.
But I just didn't have the ambition. And my biggest fear has always been, you know, just in case I was 50 and I ended up on the odds of 55. But to be fair, I really believed in Fairstone. I thought Fairstone was one of the best things I've ever seen.
How did they come to you? Or did they ring you up? Or did they?
Yeah, actually, it was a very funny story. I was on the couch on a Saturday morning. I got like 4 or 5 missed calls from a kind of corporate broker in the Irish marketplace. This young guy, Paddy, on the end of the phone, was like, this crowd are coming to Dublin. They've got a list compiled by one of the big four. They're looking around. I follow you on Instagram, this lad said. He's only in the mid-20s. You're not on the list, but I think you should be on the list.
Well, good for him.
And fair play to him. He got me. I was going to take the head off him after ringing for 5 times on a Saturday morning. And we met Fairstone on Wednesday. They came in for an hour for 1 o'clock. And they didn't leave until about 5. We went for dinner that night.
Because you kept talking.
Because I was talking to Wendy. And we had a meal that night. Myself and Lee had a very good chat. We shook hands on a deal, in fairness to them. They lived up to that deal.
Within those couple of hours?
Yeah.
That is fantastic.
Exactly what they were after. And we knew what we were looking for as well, if you were ever to go. What they bring to the table is, I think everybody thinks M&A is easy. It's not that easy if you're trying to build a business. It's anyone can buy another business. That's not that difficult. It's money. What they brought was 10 years of experience.
Integration is not the big issue.
And the integration is what Fairstone are absolutely masters of in the UK market and now in
and
Ireland.
And you've got this, I was going to use a rude word, this DBO thing.
Yes.
What's that?
So the downstream buyer model. What we do is we find partners firms that are looking to get out over in the future, not looking to sell today. So maybe 10 years away, 15 years away. It could be less if they wanted to. We acquire a very small proportion of the business, usually under 10% now. And then we get the integration done over 2 years. And when the integration's done, then we buy the remaining 90% of the business. We hope those people, or the CEOs in particular, or the majority shareholders, stay for the very foreseeable future. But we think that integration is the biggest stumbling block to many M&A transactions. And, you know, Lee has spoken about this many a time, and that it's like an engagement. You know, you're trying to get engaged before the big day. We go through all the pain together, and like, change can be painful for people.
And the integration, are you using IT integration, or what other kind of integration are you talking
about?
So
I remember I mentioned the Clear Choice business. We had our own CRM that we'd acquired previously as well. So we used that system. We had used it in PAX, and a few hundred other brokers use it as well with Clear Choice. So we use that as our main system. So they're onboarded onto that platform, and then we have a really good senior management team as well in place, some of the best in the business in the Irish marketplace that have come on board into Fairstone since our acquisition. We've done a massive upgrade and our management team, and they're phenomenal. So yeah, we go in and we help the business integrate into Fairstone, and then we start writing the bigger checks. But you grow through that. So if your price of your EBIT is today is just say 500,000, and in 2 years' time it's 700,000, but it's 7 times the multiple of what you're agreed, and you get bought out then over another 3 or 4 year period, depending on the structure.
That's useful. That means that you are still incentivized to grow.
Yes, and we should be able to take the back office pain away, as well as that. The majority of brokers are really good speaking to people, as you can tell. They're really good with clients, and they're really good in front of people talking about their complicated sometimes affairs, whether it's personal finance, whether it's business exit strategy, whatever it may be. And they don't want to be in the office bogged down by compliance and HR issues. So we take that burden away from day one, which is amazing. And so it gives them a chance to grow.
And is that a Fairstone system, or is this your other system?
No, that's the Fairstone DBO system.
Okay.
And that's why we were so attracted to them. Because we had dreams in the past, not going to lie. We spoke to one or two brokers about coming together in the past and building a big business. And one was over the west of Ireland. But to be fair, I dodged a bullet. Not with that guy or that firm, an amazing firm. But we hadn't a clue what we were doing. And like I said, the first time we went over to UK's head office, which was in Newcastle at the time, they pulled out this blueprint of integration. And I was like 5 or 6 A2s to stay put together. Like, and I was like, from the very first phone call right the way through to the last check, what happens in the process? And it's, I think it's about 400 or 500 different pieces of the jigsaw. And that's what true integration is. I mean, anyone can buy a business, give a check, agree a figure. But trying to build an integrated business is a completely different animal. I think that's why we're so attracted to them, is their experience in doing that.
How many targets are there in this country? What you said that you want to target how many?
About 50 to 70, I'd
say. How much of the market is that?
I'd say probably the active market, maybe 10%. There's about 1,200 regulated entities on the central bank register.
Gone through every one of them, have you?
We would have had most of them in Clear Choice. We sold the licenses, you see. So we had a good relationship. Like, we know whose kids are going to take over the business, who's not to bother talking to. We know who's retiring and they want to get out next year, and they're not for us because we can't integrate them in time, and they're just
interesting.
Business.
Okay. Yeah.
So we're looking for, typically speaking, you know, we did buy a firm recently where the shareholder was going off, but they had a really good management team.
Was that one over in Galway?
It's one in Galway, yeah. We bought 2 in Galway recently, actually. One of the first DBOs was Galway, and then the first acquisition has been in Galway. And, you know, so yeah, it depends really on the business. But yeah, I mean, it's about 10%. When you look at the central bank register, it's about 1,200 regulated entities. Out of those entities, we're going to have maybe accountants in there that have a bit of a license with the central bank from years ago, a general broker that does motor and household, has a little bit of life assurance. We think the true market's maybe 800. So yeah, we're probably looking about maybe 7, 8, 10% of the market.
And what are you specifically looking for? Best would be wealth management or?
Yeah, wealth management firms and financial planning firms, I suppose. You know, there's been a lot of transactions in the general insurance space. So people that do, you know, commercial insurance, household, motor, more commercial, they've gone through a massive consolidation over the last few years. So we're probably the first major play in the Irish marketplace for the life and pensions broker. You know, it depends. They're all different shapes and sizes. We've been talking to some that won't fit our model. They're too small or too young maybe in their business. But we might know another firm that we're swinging by back for in 3 years' time, so they might do a deal. So we always say it's worthwhile talking to us. If we're not in the position to do the deal, we'll definitely know someone that we are doing business with that will do the deal with you now. And it's a really good system. I'm lucky enough we've got good market knowledge over the last 10 years of being proactive.
Perfect segue, because what is the market like at the moment? We are obviously, very obviously getting wealthier as a nation. Is it time, go back to the first thing we were talking about, is it time for us to grow up and manage our money better?
It is, 100%. There's a lot of wealth out there. There's a lot of people that are in a very financially secure situation. I don't even know they're in a financially secure situation.
I have to cut across you. I was looking at, there was a jump in Facebook's wealth.
Oh, wealth last year, trillion.
Did you see that Zuckerberg went up $28 billion? And I said, that's probably more than most of all of the wealth.
Oh, the wealth in this country.
One day.
It's unbelievable, the wealth of that business. And again, they keep just getting bigger in the stock market. Oh, look, it's crazy what's going on at the moment. I'm sure you'll appreciate it as the next stockbroker, but it's madness. But yeah, I suppose I find a lot of clients come into us for financial planning consultations. This only happened last week, actually, where couples in particular, couples where there's two incomes, it's easier to get more financially stable, to be fair. Kind of mid-50s, some early 40s or late 40s, depending on the situation, where they're actually financially secure and they think they don't understand how their company pension works. They don't understand how their previous pension worked, and they don't understand how to work the cash that they have at the moment. And, you know, typically speaking, they could have retired at 60. In their own head, they were okay to go at 60. And I was saying, you can go today. And she broke down crying because she was just worked out, I think. And this happens to us quite a lot, where we're so unfamiliar with how best to utilize our cash flow that we genuinely could end up working for 5 or 10 years longer than necessary. And I'm coming across that, honestly, 2 or 3 times a week now. My biggest problem is for people over 55 years of age getting to spend their money, because they're just so used to, now they would have been obviously in an Ireland that I don't know, that was no money, rising interest rates, really high unemployment.
That wasn't so long ago, you know.
No, it wasn't. It's scary to think of it. So, yeah, I mean, I think we need to take responsibility. And I know I would say this as a financial planner, but I think everybody that feels that they don't know a little bit about their finances should speak to a certified financial planner. You know, we're highly trained right across all the different facets of your financial planning. You know, whether it's your business, whether it's your income, whether it's, you know, your investments, your savings, whether it's previous pension plans, or whether it's estate planning for your own kids, or whether you're getting inheritance and trying to reduce inheritance tax from your own parents. There's just so much to be taken into consideration.
And I'm sure that you have read or seen Warren Buffett going on about the power of compound interest.
Oh, compound interest.
Compound interest is all people really need to know, because it makes you a lot of money.
It makes you a lot of money, yeah. Yeah, it does. Especially if you get into something in your 20s or 30s by the time you get to 60. But I do think as well, the flip side that was having an Instagram page and a successful one at that is, we see the Instagram lifestyle now for most people in their 20s and 30s. They want it today and tomorrow. They don't want to wait 30 years for money. And they don't understand
so
that patience
that
game when it comes to money.
But, I mean, okay, they don't have money now, so yeah. They have to wait. I mean, it's kind of forced on you.
It is, but I think there's so many get-rich-quick schemes out there, you know. There's so, if I asked, I'm going to put a guess on this, but anyone 20 to 25 years of age has probably heard about Bitcoin.
I was going to throw that out to you. Yeah. What's your view on Bitcoin?
I think the blockchain is phenomenal.
I said Bitcoin.
I think Bitcoin will do well in the back of blockchain, because I think it's the first in best dress of Bitcoin. I held Bitcoin, I got rid of it, less than 1% of my own wealth. I did, in fairness. I don't mind saying I went in at 19,000 only less than a year ago, and I came out at 43,000 there a couple of weeks ago. So very successful.
But to go back now, you're giving advice.
Yeah.
I cannot abide Bitcoin for a reason. because it has no basis in terms of value.
Doesn't. No, well,
So you were gambling.
I was gambling. Oh, yeah. No, and I said that. And I let my followers know, because so many people ask me, and I don't like it. And I don't like it from the point of view that I think if you're going to put 1% into something, and I think Bitcoin is honestly like going at the Paddy Power and picking a horse, or someone saying, there's a tip for a horse. The problem for Bitcoin is actually, I'm not trying to say to anybody to do this, but it's kind of the economics of how people work. People get fearful that they're going to miss out on something, so they get into it. And that's what gives the price rise. Then when the price comes high, they have the fear of losing what they have, so they get out of it. So it's literally, in my opinion, very easy to track the highs and lows of Bitcoin since I became interested a few years ago. Now, interest as in, no, don't think it should be a financial planning tool, don't think you should use it. But I got into it because so many people were asking about it. And I think the time that the transfer had to be under 20K for whatever reason. So I made it 19K, never put any more money in. And yeah, I took it out then when it went up over 40K. I was thinking it's not going to get better than this. And yeah, maybe I can say abuse the system a little bit for it to work. But I'm surprised it hasn't had a massive jump on, you know, the SEC approving across the US. And I think that shows that it doesn't perform like anyone thinks it's going to perform.
It'll all end in tears.
It will. And it's a sure, no sure thing.
Two final questions. I hope you know that there is a final question, but we'll get on to that in a second. The second one. Everybody has a hobby horse.
Yes.
What's your hobby horse?
I like working out. I'm trying to play golf at the moment, which is really difficult.
I mean a hobby horse.
Oh, hobby horse. Sorry, excuse me.
Something that you want to complain or moan or groan about.
I didn't hear the hobby horse. I didn't hear the horse piece. I don't know. I'm going to have to say the lack of education around personal finance in Ireland. I'm really disappointed by it. Like, I was lucky enough. My father was in business and construction industry. I was lucky as a kid growing up. I was listening to VAT rates and people not paying and tenders and quantity surveyors are sitting around the kitchen table talking about when they're going to get tenders in for this job and that job. So I was lucky to grow up around business money. And, you know, my dad was quite cute when it came to his finances. Not everyone's lucky enough to have that. And I suppose my dad's name is Paul as well. That's where the play maybe Ask Paul came from a little bit too. But, you know, yeah, I think we should be educated much higher. I don't remember much of what I learned in school. I wasn't that good in it. But I know most of what I've learned hasn't come to help me since I left school.
And to be able to run a bank account. I mean, simple in and out.
I think, you know, these days, well, with even business, when you look at business, a lot of kids do business these days. There's a little bit of budgeting from a business point of view. But personal finance is the very same as business. You have to be able to have income coming out and keep an eye on your expenses. So you're looking at your sales and your outcomes, your sales and costs. And it's the same with running your personal house. It's the exact same, especially if you have kids. Especially if you're in a relationship with somebody, you two are the managing directors, the CFOs and CEOs of your own little business, and you have to remain profitable and you have to keep money coming in and growing every year.
You're the head driver.
Yeah.
You're the front of receptionist and everything else. You're everything.
And you're HR when the kids start moaning.
Final question to you, to Paul Merriman. Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Who would I hire in a heartbeat? I'm going to have to go with one of the kind of guys that I followed for a long time before I got to personal finance, a guy called Gary Vaynerchuk.
A few people like him.
Yes.
A lot of people like him.
Yeah, Gary is amazing. If anyone's following and any interest in getting their business online the way we did, I'd highly recommend checking out Gary Vaynerchuk, Gary V's content and his books. They're phenomenal and they really helped us turn what I was quite passionate about into an online success, and definitely led to us growing as rapidly as we did and being able to sell the business. So
he's been to Dublin a few times. Have you ever met him?
No, I haven't met him. I'm going to say yes, I definitely will get around to it. But he also does really good, they're quite expensive, where you get to the New York office, get an hour with Gary and the team and this, then they're
that's a new thing now.
It is, you know, 100K plus.
Yeah. And you can get, I don't know whether Warren Buffett is available, but you know, that kind of stuff.
They're not far off it, yeah. I've always spoke about trying to do a kind of personal finance event, maybe in Ireland, getting Gary in for it. But I'm sure we'll cross paths at some stage.
How much would you charge for that hour?
Well, to be honest with you, we've been doing so much free stuff at this stage, I'm not sure how we know how to charge for it.
My heart bleeds.
No, from personal finance, anyone can ask a question on our page for free. We've helped tens of thousands of people with free, you send a DM into the page and we get back to anything with personal finance. But I genuinely would love to, maybe if this does come to an end at some stage in the future, hopefully it's a very distant future, because I'm quite passionate about Fairstone Ireland, that we would be able to do those events for charity more than anything else, because we would have a big thing towards charity more than anything.
Paul Merriman, I'm going to call you the fastest mouth in the West. And my God, I can talk, but you're right up there. You're my new talking hero.
I tried to squeeze a lot in fairness. We had a time restriction.
CEO of Fairstone Ireland, if you're trying to sell your business, give Paul a shout, but ask Paul.
Ask Paul, there you go.
You'll get him there. Paul Merriman, CEO of Fairstone Ireland. Thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Thank you.
That Great Business Show.
De Facto, the revolutionary shaving oil, changing the face of shaving. For the smoothest shave of your life, just add water. No more lathering up or cleaning up afterward. Just add a few drops of water and you're ready to go. De Facto's blend of all natural oils hydrates and protects your skin. No more razor burns or irritation. A spa treatment for your face. Perfect for all skin types and lasts so much longer than traditional foams or gels. De Facto, a shaving revolution. Just add water. Available from selected pharmacies and from defactoshave.com.
That Great Business Show. Winner, highly commended award. Irish Podcast Awards.
SIA Partners. Yeah, I'll say it again. SIA Partners. No, I hadn't heard of them either. But the Irish arm of the international consulting firm is growing very, very fast. They have 80 people working for them in Ireland now and going for growth, hoping to double again in the next 2 or 3 years. The Paris HQ'd multinational business claims loads of specializations, banking, insurance, life sciences, you know, the usual. And the company's clients in Ireland include on Post, ESP, AXA and Icon. Gary O'Sullivan is managing partner at SIA Partners in Ireland and joins us on That Great Business Show. Gary, you're welcome.
Thank you very much. Nice to meet you.
Now, go back a wee bit. You are a consultant by nature because you've been doing this for quite a while, not at SIA.
Too long, I think.
Never too long.
I started out as an engineer, actually, and not in the consulting game at all.
I saw that. You were down in Limerick, weren't you?
That's right. And I moved around different sectors from Ford to Kodak at one point.
What did you do with Ford?
Bausch & Lomb. I started out making cars in Dunton.
Did you?
Yeah,
which
and
car?
In Dagenham.
I'm a bit of a car freak. What kind of cars did you? Which
Fiestas
cars did you?
And the Cosworth. I saw the very first Cosworth before it ever was ever released out. It was a fantastic car. I didn't even know what it was when I saw it. It was a fabulous car. So it was good fun. There was 4,000 engineers working in one factory.
Wow.
Took me half an hour to walk from one end of the factory to the other. I was always a half an hour late for work as a result.
As you probably had a little chat with each one of them, did you?
Yeah. It was so big, they actually had traffic lights in the middle of the factory and everything for people to go.
And what, have you any
incredible
idea, what is it like now?
They downsized quite a bit over there. Yeah. So they offshored quite a bit of manufacturing.
Ford, is Ford made in Mexico?
There used to be 12,000 people in that factory.
And vast, isn't it?
So it used to be huge.
And you're from Buncrana. Like, that's Buncrana to the time. How many times would Buncrana go into 12,000?
Oh, yeah, quite a bit. 12 times probably.
Exactly. Yeah. So tell us about SIA. Where did first of all, what's the name?
SIA, I believe its origins are in a Greek god of knowledge and innovation. So I think that was the original. The firm was founded by Matthew Curtacuse in 24 years ago, actually this year, or maybe 25 years this year, by himself and a couple of other founders, just straight out of college. And it's been growing and doubling in size nearly every 3 years since.
Now, there you go. Now, you said straight out of college. What knowledge can somebody straight out of college bring to an existing business?
I mean, the first thing you'd have to have is a lot of foresight. And I think that's one thing you can say that Matthew has. He's the only person I know that lives in the future today.
Okay.
And every day. So what he sees coming down the road is normally years and years ahead of everybody else.
Like, how was he on the lotto numbers?
I'll ask him for you. I'll let you know.
Please do. So he's one of those futurologists. Yeah. I love those guys. I've come across one or maybe two over the years, and they're fascinating. I heard there was a guy, I can't remember his name now, but he was with HP, and he used to talk about how we will one day be able to talk to rocks. And I said, come on. And he said, no, silicon is a rock. And what are we doing with silicon nowadays? And it was just, I said, okay, you're bigger brain than me, I can tell you.
That look at Leakslip and it'll tell you the answer to that.
Exactly. So back to SIA.
Yeah, so SIA. So Matthew had a vision and he's been executing it for the last 20 plus years. And the vision is growing even further. We want to double the size of the business globally in the next 3 years.
There is competition out there, you know that.
There is, yeah, there is. But we're pretty confident that we've invested in the right areas. I mean, we've been building and developing and investing in AI, for example, for the last decade. We have 300 data scientists now. which is 10% of our workforce out of 3,000 globally, which is a pretty large percentage. And they're on the energy, the engineering end of data science rather than the analytical end of it.
What's the difference for anybody who has to use it?
Mostly it's about the application. So I think for analytics, if you can imagine getting information and data and then presenting that data back is probably the analytics end of data science, whereas the engineering end would be applying and building algorithmic solutions for to solve complex problems.
So and that's what is the future? What are you going to do? What are we going to do with AI?
Well, the first thing I hope is we apply it and we start using it so we can learn of its use. I mean, it's going to be a very, very effective productivity tool for even anybody. You know, Microsoft, for example, have just pushed out Copilot, which is going to come as part of if you've got a Microsoft license for your Word or your Excel or your PowerPoint, it's going to be embedded in it.
It is, I think, already
isn't it? Yeah. So you can use that. And, you know, you'll start using it for everyday use where you're doing a lot of trawling through data or through, you know, Excel spreadsheets and so on. This will help you do a lot of that work. It'll build pivot tables. It'll analyze data. It'll answer questions for you and so on.
Are you using it yet?
Yeah, we are. We're actually helping.
No, I mean you.
Yes, I am.
For what?
I use it for generating proposal analytics. I use it for gathering. So we have our own internal version of GPT models called CAGPT. And we use that to, for example, extract methodologies and things like that from our database of proposals. So we could have 20,000 proposals and I could say, I need a methodology for this, or I need an approach for that. And it will extract that out and present it to me. I then obviously need to modify it, tailor it for what we're doing. But that's an example of rather than having to go and trawl through everything to find what you're looking for, it will go and get it.
And yeah. Companies in Ireland, are they adopting it quickly, rapidly, or what's happening?
There's huge interest in it. There's huge interest in it. And I would say everybody has it on their agenda for this year, for 2024. But I think what you're going to find is there'll be tasters. It's like an appetizer. People will have a look at it and then they'll start to think, right, how can I apply this? And they'll ease into it. So you're getting a lot of demonstrators. You're getting people who saying, look, I might try it out here, try it out there. Others are waiting to see what's going to come through, right? And
that is an issue, though, isn't it? Because it is growing so rapidly and so quickly and so vast that, you know, you'll be the early adopter, but you might be on a bicycle when you could be in your Ford Cosworth.
I agree. I think there are always companies out there who are determined that they're going to, you know, let's say, accelerate their own advancement. And they'll be the ones that will pick this up and immediately seek to apply it. We're seeing a lot of that in the US, for example. You know, they're very early adopters of new technologies. And there are companies over there who are now applying it in their HR departments, their procurement departments, their finance departments, even ESG reporting. We've recently won the Amazon or AWS award for the use of AI in ESG reporting in the US. And a lot of our clients over there are picking it up. So we're now actually talking to them here about it as well. It just makes the whole, you know, audit trail and the reporting on what your duties in relation to ESG. It makes it a lot easier.
Bugbears about business in Ireland. You're obviously covering an awful lot of sectors, so you know a reasonable amount about lots of businesses. What are the big problems that we just don't face up to here?
Well, there's a few things. I think I suppose the first thing is we tend to follow, we do follow other markets, right? So we're not always the people who are leading out. Now, that's not true for Irish multinationals that are based here. They're quite progressive. They have to be. We have a small island, right? So to succeed globally and off the island of Ireland, it takes a lot of gumption and a lot of energy and determination. So there's some fantastic examples of that. But in other sectors, we can be a little bit slower. We're followers rather than leaders and innovators. And we definitely see that in terms of the appetite and the adoption of some of the new technologies. But I'm glad to say we're catching up, you know.
We have to.
Yeah. For example, we did a project on the metaverse here, and we were Project 101. It was the 101st project we did globally. I'm glad to say it was in Dublin with the CPA, you know, the Certified Public Accountants.
The metaverse.
Yes.
People aren't sure if it's ever going to exist. Do you think it is?
Absolutely. There's no question.
Explain.
Well, if you think about our global markets right now and the connectedness of it all, firstly, to work globally and in the past, to work globally tended you get on a plane and you have to go somewhere and do something and transact and build personal relationships. In the last 3, 4, 5 years, particularly post-COVID, we can now do those kinds of things virtually over Teams or other channels. But imagine a world where you can do this digitally and inside a universe that's infinite. So they,
now you see, you've almost lost me there now. So what are you actually talking about? Give me some example.
You can create an infinite number of marketplaces and an infinite number of instances of marketplaces. For example, if I bridge the off-chain world and the on-chain world, for example, if I buy a pair of sneakers from like a big brand called Nike, right, who are already doing this, and when I go into my game, if I'm 16 years of age and that's all that interests me at that stage, and those sneakers that I've bought, I can also wear them on my avatar in my game, or I can win a pair of sneakers and customize them for myself in the digital world and then translate that into the real world and wear those sneakers down the road when I'm going to meet my mates and customize. And that's happening.
Keep going. This is another world.
Yeah, so in a lot of ways, then what you're doing is you can set up new trading marketplaces and there are new economies that exist in there. There are, for example, worlds like the Sandbox or Decentraland, where there is real estate that's for sale. I think the most expensive real estate that ever sold in the digital world was for $1 million in Decentraland, and it's a purely digital property.
So it doesn't exist?
No.
Ah, come on, you know, this is the stuff that is all bull.
Yeah, it doesn't exist at the moment, but in the future, when people are interacting with that and they're having to pay for entry, or it's a place where people want to hang out, which they do, because a lot of people spend a lot of time on digital. Just again, ask my son. They will interact there. And the world is moving more and more to an online virtual digital interaction. And as it does, the demand for new services and products will grow there.
So therefore, and this is the bit that excites me always, is opportunities. There are, 300,000 businesses in Ireland. And what are the opportunities for them? No matter what size, small, teeny or huge, that you are now seeing, because this is what you obviously know and love.
Yeah, let's say the easiest answer to that is on the retail end, right? So for example, what I've just mentioned, which is you can cross virtual products and digital products and versions of that product with real life products. The other ones are things like fractional ownership, where people get to invest and speculate, for example, in digital real estate, right? Where you tokenize it and you break it down and you see with gamers and people who are playing games and buying avatars and buying this and buying that, there is an economy. There's a financial economy going on in there, and that money gets moved around and distributed. So there are definitely opportunities there. There are opportunities for people to provide utilities. So for example, you might digitize your services if you had a theme park, or if you had if you were trying to raise money for something, and you might sell that digital tokens, raise the money for your project, raise the money for your charity. People can hold a little receipt to say, I'm a charity contributor to the World Wildlife Fund. I have 3 or 4 of them myself, where you would invest in that and you're contributing over the long term to these charities. There's many, many, many different examples of how this can be done.
Well, boy, I think we're going to have you in again, because my head is now spinning a wee bit. For those companies, the larger companies that are actually selling, whether it's butter or milk or anything like that, where is it going to apply to physical selling?
So I suppose, look, it will take a while, because there's a combination of things that will have to come together for this to be, let's say, very practical. But you could imagine, so customer loyalty is a very big, important thing in retail, for example. Retail habits and preferences is another thing that's very, very happy. We know that through the loyalty cards if you shop in supermarkets. In the future, these kinds of traits can be tracked technologically on Web3, on the blockchain. You can use that data to determine how to target and involve people in building communities.
Are they not doing that already?
They are. They'll do it through Google. But when you start to move into Web3 and various other ways, but when you move from Web2 into Web3, it becomes one-to-one, rather than an organization sitting in the middle.
What is the difference, sir, between Web2 and Web3?
So Web2 is like, the simplest way to put it is you go onto a website and you log in with a username and a password, and you're logging into a system that is provided by another entity or another company, and they are giving you back what service and giving you information. Web3 is where you already have a digital wallet or a digital signature, and when you log in, it is in a one-to-one relationship with the person that you're working with. So no third-party enterprise holds your data. You can hold it personally and privately.
And you control that data. Where is that at the moment in terms of development?
It's quite early. Well, it's not that early. It exists, but it's a bit clunky, to be be honest.
And when will we see working models that we'll all be...
Probably when some of these the companies that are in the center at the moment start to bring on these technologies themselves, I think, and you'll find a hybrid.
But they're not going to let go of all of that data, that power that they have.
They certainly won't want to.
Yeah.
But there's a major, I suppose, you know, let's say, transformation happening in that space now, where because the technology allows you to start to cut out some of the middlemen organizations, platforms and so on. There's a move towards this autonomy. There's a move towards communities of people taking ownership of their own data and what they do with that data, right down to the individual as well. So you're going to see a shift. You're going to see a shift, I think, of power, where the power moves to the individual. The individual controls what data they will share and for what purpose and when. You will start to see that happening more and more as we start to monetize that data. So, for example, if my data is, you know, valuable to somebody, I may sell that data, or I may give them the ability to use that data, and I won't want a return.
I think that is around already, is it not? That some people are trying to sell data for you.
There are good examples of it. You know, the other examples that are starting to happen, for example, is there's one called Royal.io, where you, as a fan, you can become a shareholder in an artist's song that's released, rather than having the music industry taking all the fees.
Oh, I like that.
The music.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah, is released and the fans buy into the song and then they get the royalties and so on. With this technology, you can do that.
Keep going. I like this. That's a nice one, actually.
Another example.
Any other ones?
I've seen ones now coming through where people are looking to build renewable housing, renewable generation, so energy generation, and where the owners of these houses and can tokenize that sell the carbon credits back into the system and actually start generating revenue for themselves. It levels the playing pitch. It brings democracy really to, it really levels the playing pitch across the world. The minute we get broadband that's accessible to poorer countries and they can fight on a level playing pitch with us, we'll start to see services coming from those countries as well that will really generate wealth for them.
Starlink is meant to be doing that at the moment, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, are you concerned at all about the big behemoths, the Googles and all, that they are at some stage going to be beaten up by the American government for trust, for being too big, as being one issue? Because we in Ireland rely a vast amount on them. Yeah. And would you be concerned that someday it's going to go pop?
I think organizations, look, I mean, I know that there's been issues leveled at larger organizations globally around data privacy and that, but I think the level of innovation and development that these organizations have brought to our world, right? You know, in every single part of what we do today, I mean, it's unrecognizable if we went back to where we don't have a phone in our hands and we can access. I don't think I'd be able to get around without Google Maps at this point. But like everything, when innovation is moving so quickly and it's moving so fast, it's difficult for the rest of us to keep pace with it. And concerns rise and unintended consequences happen. And I think then regulators and governments and community groups and so on, quite rightly too, get concerned about these things and then they need to act on it. And that's what's happening. So you're starting to see that happening in the US and in Europe. There are concerns about the financial systems and things like that. If things break that, if there's a significant amount of fraud, as we know these days, and that can influence what happens geopolitically and so on. So we do need to be on top of this. We need to ensure that we regulate the right things, but we cannot starve innovation. We must not starve innovation.
And you may, as in a company, your company may already be advising both Enterprise Ireland and IDEA. If you were saying to the IDEA, listen, these are the companies, the future companies, because we've got I won't say use the word lucky, but we were very lucky to get the big Americans in, and now we're getting the pharma companies in. What would you next go after?
I definitely think any investment that we can put into the development of new technologies such as AI and the application of those technologies.
But everybody's chasing it, isn't it? I mean, Rishi Sunak is chasing it. The Parisians are chasing it.
Next month it'll be something else, right? But AI is here to stay. It's been here for a very long time. It's just now the catchphrase that's important for everybody. I think that's a really important area. I think the other areas of importance is around climate action and technologies and so on that will really, really make a difference in those spaces. I think the level of R&D and innovation that's happening in Ireland now as a spin-off of some of our work with over the last number of decades in pharmaceuticals and in technologies is starting to show up. There's some great companies coming out there, and we're starting to really play at the world stage, I think, on these areas now as well. I think bioenergy is, and renewables is another area. Look at the resources that we have around our coastline and wind.
We've been looking
and solar
at that for 20 years.
We certainly have.
It's a slow, slow build.
What would you recommend we should do?
Well, with that, I mean,
you'll have talked to a number of people here.
Build it and they will come. I mean, just stop talking. Just do it. Come here to me. I need you to come back in again. I love this stuff. And particularly, I'm going off to buy royalties now for my favorite rock stars. Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Oh my God. Somebody lucky. We can never have enough luck. But somebody I really like lately is Bobby Healy.
We do.
Man of Drone. I've been following him for the last year or two. I love his exploits. I love what he's doing.
And drones, I mean, that's going to be vast.
Huge.
I'm talking about the size of these things.
Yeah.
They are what's happening in Ukraine at the moment. And so much, I mean, it's vast.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody the other day and they were telling me that they had a speaker in at one of their events and that the speaker's son is now flying drones in US cities at nighttime, heat mapping buildings for their heat loss for a construction company. And then they're then pitching into these companies to say,
if you want to save $20,000
exactly.
a week.
Yeah. So it's fantastic, isn't it?
That is brilliant. I love that stuff. Yeah. Drones. Okay, Bobby's obviously he's busy, but we'll see whether we can get him to join.
Have to get to meet him someday.
He's always available as far as I know.
Is he?
You'll find him on Twitter. Or
I follow him, right. He's good.
Very, very interesting.
Great innovator.
So much. Gary O'Sullivan, Managing Partner at Sia Partners. And if anybody wants to find you, just buzz Gary, I presume.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And thanks. Do come back again, please, to that great business show.
Thank you. You've been very kind.
De Facto, the revolutionary shaving oil, changing the face of shaving. For the smoothest shave of your life, just add water. No more lathering up or cleaning up afterward. Just add a few drops of water and you're ready to go. De Facto's blend of all natural oils hydrates and protects your skin. No more razor burns or irritation. A spa treatment for your face. Perfect for all skin types and lasts so much longer than traditional foams or gels. De Facto, a shaving revolution. Just add water. Available from selected pharmacies and from defactoshave.com.
It's all go, let Chrissy know on thatgreatbusinessshow.com.
That great business show.
And that is it for episode 178 of That Great Business Show. Great business insights and inspiration. All thanks to our lovely sponsor, De Facto Shaving Oil. The world's best shaving oil. And I know I've tried the others, but De Facto is the only one I will use. Remember to sign up for email updates and we'll send you your own personal copy of the podcast at thatgreatbusinessshow.com. Do share, do like, and do give us 5-star reviews. It really helps us a lot. And advertise with us, of course, on That Great Business Show to engage with our incredible audience of entrepreneurs, business owners, business wannabes, business investors, and just the general public. We recorded the Dublin South Podcast Studios, where today's studio engineer is Terry Brock. And later, the dynamic duo of studio manager Peter Rice and post-production engineer Neil Horner ensure we remain the world's best-sounding business podcast. So from me, Conal Amoran, buíochas to you all, agus slán tamall.